Labor and Commerce have now come to order at 3:05. Present, we have Representative Gardner, Representative Book, Representative Gatto, and myself, Representative Olson, Chair of this committee. First bill up, we have nobody here to present it, so we'll go to the... You want to do it for Jay? We'll go on to 168. And with us is... Please identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is David Scott. I am staff to Representative Johansson. Representative Johansson sends his regrets and apologies. He couldn't be here today. He has a scheduling conflict. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, House Bill 168 authorizes two exchanges of land of approximately 10 acres between the Alaska Railroad Commission and the Alaska Department of Transportation in order to accommodate two DOT projects. Those projects are the widening and lane improvement of the Parks Highway in Wasilla and the construction of a heavy aircraft cargo apron at the Fairbanks International Airport. Both of these projects require an adjustment to the railroad's track and right-of-way lands. Mr. Chairman, this legislation ensures that all of the appropriate titles to property can be in place for both of these DOT projects. Section 1 of House Bill 168 pertains to the land exchange for the Parks Highway Improvement Project, and Section 2 of House Bill 168 pertains to the land exchange for the cargo apron at the Fairbanks International Airport. Alaska Statute 4240-285 requires legislative approval for the Alaska Railroad Commission to, quote, exchange, donate, sell, or otherwise convey its entire interest in land. And Mr. Chairman, to answer any of the specifics regarding these projects, representatives from the Department of Transportation and the Alaska Railroad Commission are in the audience or online.
Well, thank you. Representative Gardner.
Thank you very much. It seems relatively straightforward. There's zero fiscal notes. It's agreed between two different agencies. I see the previous committee was straight through due pass. Is there anybody who's objecting to this?
Not that I have heard of, as long as I've been working on this. No, through the chair.
Thank you.
I'd like the record to reflect we've been joined by Representative Ledoux, who has a question probably. No?
Not yet.
Well, I think Representative Gardner had my question, and that's, has there been any opposition to it? And I don't think there has there?
Mr. Chairman, no. None that I've heard.
We've got Tom Brooks online and Fran Zimmerman, both from, Tom's from the Alaska Railroad, Fran's from DOT. We also have Wendy Linsky from the railroad in the audience. If the committee has any question for any of these people, they're all available for questions.
I'd just like to say hello to Tom.
Oh, hello, Berta.
Hi, Tom.
Yeah, I'd like to say hello to Wendy. How you doing, Wendy? Do we have any further questions? Do we have anybody in the audience that would care to testify either way on this bill? What are the wishes of the committee?
Mr. Chair, I would move House Bill 168, Version C, from committee with attached zero fiscal notes and any individual recommendations.
I'm going to object because I really want to ask a question.
Oh.
Representative Gatto.
I apologize. It's just that in the comment... Let me put it this way. Has the railroad in the Wasilla area already been relocated?
Mr. Representative Gatto, through the chair, yes.
And this bill then does what, since the train is on a different track?
Representative Gatto, through the chair, I would say it approves the title transfer. There, I could let a member of...
Representative Gatto, this is Fran Zimmerman with DOT through the chair.
You woke us up. Please continue.
All right. Yes, the tracks have been relocated as a portion of the Parks Highway project. This is a title transfer act only, and because the Railroad Corporation does not have the ability to convey its title without legislative action, that's simply, this is enabling legislation for that purpose.
Paul?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess what I was asking is, we got It's the difference between permission and forgiveness. Is this a situation where first we do the act and then we come to the legislature and say, by the way, we need some approval to do what we've already done and I'm not able to reverse? And I'm okay because I think it was a good idea, but is that what happened?
Representative, I think Gatto through the chair. I don't know that that is in fact what we're dealing with here. We normally, in dealing with the Alaska Railroad, enter into temporary construction easements or permits or rights of entry in order to be able to go forward with the construction of the project. Because of the timelines involved, we rarely have an opportunity to be able to have the legislation required for the railroad to convey property be in place in a time that would allow the project to proceed on schedule.
I'm okay. I just wanted
you okay? Any further questions? I'll bring it back to the committee again. What's the will of the committee?
So you want to remove his objection?
I'm sorry. Thank you. I removed my objection.
And let the record reflect we've been joined by Representative Rammers. What are the wishes of the committee?
I believe I moved the bill, Mr. Chair.
Any opposition? The bill is gone. Thank you very much.
Mr. Chairman, it's 3:30. I need to go to the Senate to find the security of the rail company.
Well, the good thing is, you want to do your bill now?
Yeah. Wonderful.
You want Barbara to?
Barbara. She's here.
Brief at ease. With us now is Barbara Cotting to present to us House Bill 28. It is a working document. Do I hear a motion to adopt that version?
Chair? Mr. Chair, I'd like to introduce House Bill 28, Version E, as a working document for the committee for referral.
Could you please identify yourself for the record?
Mr. Chairman, thanks for hearing this bill again. My name is Barbara Cotting, staff to Representative Jay Ramris. At our last hearing on this bill, we adopted Version C. Now I have Version E, which makes a couple of small changes to Version C. One, it deleted Section 2, which the bill drafter decided was unnecessary because it's covered by other sections in the bill. And per our discussion at the last hearing of this bill, we removed the section that was Section 5, and that means utilities grossing under $50,000 a year remain exempt from the reporting requirements. I'll be glad to answer any questions. I believe we have the RCA online again.
We have Rich Gazaway and James Keene from the RCA online, and do we have any questions for Barbara at this point? Mr. Gazaway, would you care to comment?
Or the committee members may have.
Are you for questions only, or do you have some testimony for us?
Testimony, we're here to respond to questioning.
Representative Gardner.
Thank you. I don't know if the RCA takes positions on bills like this. Can you tell me if you have a position? Mr. Gazaway?
This is James Keene with the RCA. Through the chair, Representative Gardner. I don't have a position on this, but we do appreciate the edits that were made in this version E. Section 5 that's been removed was the one that would be very difficult for us to enforce. But the remainder of the bill, as it's presented here, is something the RCA could do through regulation if it's passed.
Thank you.
Representative Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I remember back when Representative was talking, Ramirez was talking about how he's seen a disclosure forum on electric bills. And that was his major reason for doing this. Is were you approached by companies to do this, or what was your initial contact or why you did this?
Representative Newman, through the chair, I got my monthly statement from California which indicated it was a power disclosure form that indicated where their power came from. And I read it and thought it was interesting to see what the configuration of the power supply in California was. In Fairbanks, for instance, I can't remember the name of the program with Golden Valley, but you can actually check a box and you can purchase, I think it's wind-generated power or hydropower. Their Gold or Green Star program, where you can opt as a consumer to buy more expensive kilowatts if you're interested in purchasing green, renewable kilowatts. So I would say that my interest came from both of those contacts. One is with, one is passive, and that is I simply opened my statement for the rental unit that I have in California, and the second one was in a dialogue with Golden Valley when they were explaining to me their Green Star program and the fact that consumers can elect to purchase more expensive kilowatts for all or a portion of their electricity in Fairbanks if they want to buy renewable kilowatts, which is a program that Golden Valley is actually quite proud of. And they're one of their stated goals is to be a 20% alternative energy by the year 2014. And I saw this as a very inexpensive way for consumers to passively become educated on what the energy source for their kilowatts are. And I thought it was just a constructive exercise in improving that dialogue. So no, I was not approached by any company, and the resistance that I met from Golden Valley, my own utility, who supported me in a campaign contribution, and I wrote them back a thank you note and indicated, boy, I've got a great piece of legislation I'm going to pass on power disclosure, which got all their hackles up, and they thought it was going to be a monthly disclosure, and it's just a one time per year only, and their resistance to that notion dissipated. So I just think it's a great way to talk about alternative energy literally at the kitchen table where we open up our household bills.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Gatto.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I'm just deathly curious. In California, the percentage of people that opt for green, were you able to pick up on that somehow?
No.
But she was.
No.
Oh, no?
No. No, I'm sorry. The Green Star program is something that Golden Valley Electric does in Fairbanks.
No, but did you say you noticed in California there was a checkoff for using green power?
No, that's the plan that we have at Golden Valley Electric in Fairbanks that's in place now. The power disclosure statement in California is a California statute. Simply just says where the various sources of energy are coming from. It was two different things. Representative Newman's question through the chair was, where did I get the idea from? And I got it from both of those situations. That one was passive. The other was in an active dialogue with Golden Valley in my capacity as a legislator when we were talking about this issue in particular.
Representative LeBeau.
This may have been answered at the last committee hearing, but if it was, I've forgotten the answer. Does anybody have any idea what this is going to cost the utilities each to do this per year?
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, I get a lot of enclosures from my utilities throughout the year, and Golden Valley, speaking only for themselves, indicated that it was a very insignificant cost, being that it's a printed document that they send out to their member groups. So I gather that there is some cost, but no more significant than any of the other enclosures that I would get from my utility. It doesn't require any extra postage because it can be inserted in a regular monthly statement. So the cost would be the printing of the document and stuffing an additional insert page in the document. But it allows us to have the dialogue at the kitchen table of where the energy source is for our kilowatts. And since Alaska is appropriately concerned about generating alternative energy, I thought it would be good to be able to have a kitchen table conversation about it.
Representative Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess Representative Ramis, This bill doesn't specifically state how you have to do it. It could just be simply a line or a document. But as you said, a lot of companies are pretty darn proud of what they're doing, you know, with alternative programs. And they can use this as a feather in their cap, per se. But it can also be just a simple notification on on a one ledger bill per year.
Through the chair, Representative Newman, you're correct. The interest that I have is Golden Valley, for instance, already publishes this information in their annual report. But I don't read my annual report, and I don't know that many of us do thoroughly read our annual reports. And so I wanted a document that would come on our monthly statement, because most of us do read our annual statements to see what kind of charges there are there. So that was why we tried to specifically request that it would be an insert, or as you say, printed on a monthly statement throughout the year.
Mr. Chair?
Follow-up.
Just to follow up on that, and I guess more of a comment, is I don't see that where it would be such a minimal expense as just typing in a line on a bill if they had to. So it does not request any specific form that has to be used. So if it's open to the company, I don't see that as an issue. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Gardner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think that a couple of the questions I had have been asked by the two previous people, and I find this really an intriguing idea, relatively innocuous, potentially very powerful, and the fact that other utility companies are not here taking a position, I mean, indicates to me that it's not a big deal to them, or they'd be here. And one other comment is, I think that a lot of utility bills will have one or two sentences printed right on the bill. It might not even require another piece of paper. They could just say, you know, once a year and put that on there. There's a line for whatever they want to say. So, I mean, to me, this is pretty simple, and I'm ready to support it.
Any further questions for Ms. Cotting? Thank you. Is there anybody in the audience that cares to testify on this bill? Seeing none, I think we'll close it out and bring it back to the committee. We've had this twice. What are the
Mr. Chair?
What are the wishes of the committee?
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move. If there's no more committee discussion, I'd like to move CS for House Bill 28, Version 25, LS0189/E from committee, with any attached fiscal notes or amendments.
Seeing no opposition, we'll send it on to finance. I believe that's the next step.
Mr. Chair.
Pardon me?
Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. Representative Kalasak, please join us. Please state your name and district for the record.
Name and district. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Scott Kawasaki, District 9 in Fairbanks. I thank the chairman and committee for allowing me to present House Bill 71 to you today. House Bill 71 is a simple bill. Representative, it's simply about public health. And RadTechs currently within the state of Alaska are not required to be licensed by the state of Alaska. When we think of all the different professions that have to be registered within the state for a license within the state of Alaska for one reason or another, most of them, if not all of them, deal with a public health issue. This bill came up in similar form 2 years ago as House Bill 150, cleared the House with some objections. Since that time, we were able to clean up House Bill 150 into its present form. The present form would license occupations relating to rad techs, radiation therapy, and nuclear medicine technology. One key issue that happened at the last portion of the session was down in Juneau, people were subject to radiation high above the levels of norm. The state's currently investigating Bartlett Regional Hospital for issues dealing with rad techs and their routine exposure to patients, and there's probably going to be a report out shortly, and I hope that it comes out and this committee is able to view that as further reason for licensing rad techs in the state of Alaska. Investigation also revealed that rad techs themselves failed to protect themselves, their patients, with lead vests is currently the general practice. This bill does nothing to prevent them from doing things that are wrong, but I think what it does do is ensure that there's a certain level of expertise in RadTechs and that the public can be assured that the RadTech that's pushing the button and aiming radioactive material toward you will have some sort of level of expertise. Late last year, we had issues dealing with smaller clinics, and I'd like to comment briefly on that, the State Hospital Nursing Association, as well as SEARCH in the southeast area, have both come out in support. I think the letters are inside the packet. The program that's taught out of Anchorage and Fairbanks has an inordinately large number of technicians that are coming out of practice with credentials, and a lot of them are living in rural areas that will be served. There are exemptions within the bill to apply to people who already have some level of expertise, including nurse practitioners, physician assistants, and MDs. We think that this bill will address at least part of the problems with RadTechs that aren't licensed and protect the public health. With that, we have a couple people online, I think, that would like to testify. We also have from the department, Division of Occupational Licensing, someone that I think may or may not make a positive comment toward the need for licensing RadTechs in the state of Alaska.
We'll start out with Chris Pierce. Are you with us, Chris?
Clyde?
Well, this is Clyde Pierce.
Clyde, I'm sorry. Welcome to Labor and Commerce. Could you please state your name and affiliation for the record?
I am Clyde Pierce, Chief of Radiological Health for the state of Alaska. I work for the Department of Health and Social Services under the Division of Public Health, and my office is with the section of the state laboratory, and I conduct radiation safety inspections throughout the state of Alaska for both the state of Alaska and under contract for the federal government for mammography machines. I just want to say at the outset that the Department of Health and Social Services does support this bill. We're not absolutely certain of the size of the problem in Alaska because at present there is no way to, we don't require registration of those who operate the equipment, for example. So we have no data to show specifically the numbers involved here. But we do know how many people have received formal training and have national certification. And based on inspections around the state, we believe that approximately a similar number are not formally trained and operate the equipment. And so that number will be somewhere around 600 to 700, we believe, people who expose humans to radiation for healthcare purposes. We are concerned not only with the radiation exposure, but also, of course, to the concerns of small doctors' offices and rural providers where there are few resources available. And we want to make sure that whatever is done to protect people, meaning patients, the general public, the unborn fetus, and the operators themselves from excessive exposure, that it takes into account specific needs of areas with more limited resources. So it's our hope the legislature can strike a balance between better protecting the public and not overburdening the small providers who provide critical health care throughout the state.
Are there any questions for Mr. Pierce, Representative Gardner?
Thank you. Mr. Pierce, I'm looking at the email that you sent to Brody Anderson on January 22nd, and it describes some of the findings that came out of the inspections.
Yeah.
And some of them deal with techniques in using the equipment. Some of them, the problems describe inappropriate use of the equipment, not techniques with the patient, and some of them have to do with, you know, malfunctioning equipment, and then there's also the issues about using aprons and gloves and stuff like that. Would this proposed licensing procedure address all of those kinds of problems?
This bill would not address everything. It would address a large proportion of them. In my inspections, I found few instances of malfunction of the machine itself. Most of the problems have to do with how the machine is used. And a very good parallel example is the fact that operators of automobiles are required to be licensed, and yet over 40,000 people die every year as a result of automobile accidents. And there are plenty of restrictions on how cars can be made and using safety glass and make sure they have brakes that work and inspections for the emissions. But it's how the automobile is used that results in those deaths for the most part. And it's very similar here. It's not such a big problem with the machine itself, but it's how the machines are being used, which can be addressed to a large extent through proper education of those who operate it.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Pierce. I guess if this letter and these examples are included as sort of backup material for the bill, it would suggest that there are problems that are being addressed by the bill. And that was kind of what raised my question. And a, you know, a really clear example of that is on the second page of that email, it says a facility in Fairbanks had a gassy X-ray tube. But because neither the operator nor the owner were knowledgeable about the characteristics of gassy tubes, it was missed for a prolonged period of time. So what you're saying now is that the licensing procedure wouldn't necessarily address this particular problem.
That particular problem, that is true. Again, most of the problems that I've observed have to do with the training and knowledge of how to use equipment safely. And there are some instances where the equipment has failed. But this bill addresses the training of those who operate the equipment.
Thank you. Oh, Mr. Chair.
Oh, Paula.
Thank you. Is there a procedure that's used in this state for addressing or for evaluating or testing equipment routinely? Is that just what you were doing?
Yes, that's correct.
Thank you.
Representative Gatto, you're a medical expert.
Question free at the moment, Mr. Chair. Uh-oh. Waiting for the sponsor. A question for him.
Well, if there are no further questions, we'll move on to Donna Rufsholm. Rufsholm? Are you with us, Donna?
Yes, I am. Thank you. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, my name is Donna Rufsholm. I'm a representative for the Alaska Society of Radiologic Technologists, and we are the individuals are the society that, the group that wrote the bill, known as House Bill 150 and then House Bill 186, currently House Bill 71. I'll give you a little history, just a little synopsis of why we felt it was necessary to write legislation to address radiation safety. We wrote House Bill 71 to address the concerns for the radiation safety of patients and establish educational guidelines for the operators of radiation-emitting equipment. These standards, we felt, would ensure that all Alaskans would receive quality care when they have an X-ray examination. We all know that there's no dose, safe dose of radiation, especially those of us who practice in the field of radiology as registered technologists who've had a formal training program. Low level of radiation can be harmful as high level radiations, and patients are not aware of these facts. They don't know how to evaluate the safety of the procedure being administered. They place all of their confidence in the healthcare worker who is performing the procedure. And the average patient assumes that anyone who takes his X-rays knows what he's doing, but we know that this is not true in the state of Alaska. Without a licensure policy, anyone in the state of Alaska can take an X-ray without training or with minimum training, and this scenario is occurring throughout facilities in the state. House Bill, passage of House Bill 71 would establish standards for individuals performing the radiology exams. This Alaska State Department of Radiological Health, as Clyde has just testified, has developed the list of documented misuses of radiation in the state of Alaska. The public can't blame the operators for the errors that they have made, as they are not required to receive training to conduct their jobs correctly, nor have they been given the opportunity. Passage of this legislation will ensure that they get the education that is necessary to perform their job in a professional manner. Some individuals have expressed concerns that this legislation will be financially burdensome for small facilities. The expense to a facility to license an individual would equate to the cost of performing one x-ray procedure, which is a small amount to pay to ensure patient safety. Any training program sponsored by a medical facility supervised and instructed by a licensed practitioner or fully licensed radiographer would also qualify as education. We want to ensure that any individual who is performing a radiology procedure has at least a minimum of education, especially with radiation safety. The bill will not alter the manner in which the small and rural clinics operate. We developed the bill in recognizing the fact that rural areas of the state have different needs with urban than the urban areas, and the ability to provide radiology services in the rural needs is crucial to the healthcare community. We wanted to make sure that there was no lapse in care to the rural areas. Major provisions are included in the bill to ensure that individuals who are currently performing x-ray procedures will be able to do so. There will be no interruption of clinic services while staff receives training. The training is available online and can be completed at the place and time convenient to the operators. Currently, there are 37 individuals enrolled in the UAA program that Representative Kawasaki mentioned, 37 individuals in the what we call the limited radiology program. These are individuals who are not going for an associate's degree. These are individuals who are from rural areas of the state, who have voluntarily enrolled so they can receive some sort of education in performing x-ray procedures. They will get a occupational endorsement from the university after the completion of the program. We just feel that we need to be patient advocates and establish standards for persons performing radiology procedures. Establishing guidelines will promote safety and quality care to all Alaskans. And that is pretty much a synopsis of how we feel, what we feel about the legislation and why we are promoting it and hoping that the legislature will pass it.
Representative Gatto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Listen, I have a question that has nothing to do with my support or opposition to the bill. Just one question that will just help me to understand more about x-rays. A film machine in the hands of a trained and licensed individual produces a certain level of radiation. The more modern digital machines in the hands of a licensed professional person gives a certain amount of radiation. Which do I opt for? That's my question.
Are you, do you want me to answer this? Are you posing this to me or to Mr. Pierce?
Well, actually, whoever really has the answer would be fine for me if there is an answer, but it may be that, you know, I think somebody probably knows that when you move to digital technology, did that actually reduce the radiation load, or did it make no difference? I guess that's the question.
This is Clyde Pierce, if I may respond to that.
Oh, certainly. Thank you.
The amount of radiation produced by the tube is determined by technique factors that are adjusted on the machine. One of the advantages of digital imaging is that it has a sensitivity that can surpass that of film and allows the possibility of using less radiation than the older technology that involves film, assuming that film is processed under optimum conditions and that there's a quality control check on the film processing as well. One of the concerns nationwide among the Health Physics Society and the American Society of Radiology Technologists is that digital also, because there is no black film when you've overexposed the patient, it does allow the possibility through misuse of the machine to actually achieve higher levels of exposure than with film. So while it's designed to reduce exposure and has that capability, there has been a trend which they refer to as dose creep to actually get higher exposures with digital when it's misused.
Thank you very much. Well, I think at this point in time, we have Rick Urian, who's expressed some interest in testifying.
Questions?
Pardon me?
You have a question?
No, I didn't have a question. I thought you did. I thought you raised your hand.
Greetings.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Rick Urian. I'm the director of the Division of Corporations, Business, and Professional Licensing, and I'm here today in support of House Bill 71. we agree with Representative Kawasaki that public health is in jeopardy, and licensure is the first step in correcting the problem. We'd ask your support.
Representative Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Urey, how many more people are going to have to be employed in your office to oversee this program?
Through the chair, Representative Newman, it would cost us one more employee to do the program. I think our fiscal note says a half of employee, but obviously there's no such thing as a half of employee. We have to hire a whole person.
Mr. Urey, how do you implement this? How do you ensure that it's done? Do you have to go to all the different doctors' offices, radiation technology centers to check all this? Or how do you ensure that it's done? How do we know that it's, everybody out there who's using radiology is licensed? How do you ensure that?
Through the chair, you mean how do we ensure that everybody is licensed?
Yes.
Is that what you're asking?
Yes.
Well, that's not going to be our job. I say we license people, and they go out and do their job. And then if there's a problem, someone will call us and complain. And from there, we have investigators that go out and investigate the issue. We're not going to be out knocking on doors of everybody to make sure they're licensed. We don't do that with businesses or any other profession that we license.
Paul?
And what do you do if somebody isn't licensed and they're using an X-ray machine?
Through the chair, the bill has several provisions in there of what we can do with an unlicensed person. And I'm not sure it's in your wisdom and how you craft this legislation as it passes through the legislature is will abide by whatever comes out at the other end. Hopefully there'll be some penalties in there for unlicensed activity.
Okay. A couple of questions. Sure. And the reason I ask that is, you know, in discussions that we've had with business licenses and people who don't have business licenses, hopefully we've got that little situation fixed now. But I was amazed to find out that nobody in the state of Alaska has ever been charged any type of citation because they've been operating in the state of Alaska without a business license while they've been running a business. It's never happened. And so now when we look at here's another license that people have to have, and it seems like all the gun laws that we have in the world that are just, they're there but not enforced. And how do you go about doing that? And so I just see this another level of government, I guess, because I would assume that if I was a doctor, and I guess maybe this is for the sponsor, but if I was a doctor and I hired a radiologist to come work in my office, I would make darn well sure that they had the qualifications that I needed, because if something happened, I would expect a patient to come back and sue me. So, you know, I guess that maybe I have a little more trust in doctors that, who hire the right people to do this than you do. Or can you respond to that, Representative Kawasaki? Yeah.
Mr. Newman, you're not a doctor. I guess just to address that fact is that we've seen clinics that do not have licensed rad techs. And I think it's a matter of cost versus health. I guess in a perfect world, you know, health would always trump cost, and I guess in some cases it doesn't in those cases. And I think that this goes to that point where we start ensuring that there is a certain level of health there across the state.
Follow up?
So, Mr. Urey, how do you go about, or the sponsor, Mr. Kawasaki, how do you go about developing a test? Who says, okay, here's what the test is going to be. This is what it has to include. You have to have this amount of knowledge, I guess. You have to have show a certain proficiency and skill level at different machines. You said that this would require only one person in your office, but it seems to me like this is quite a bit of work that has to develop. Who approves all of that?
Well, through the chair, as I read the bill, there's a national group that has developed a test, and we're going to use their expertise and use their test. We're not going to reinvent the wheel, and we're going to make this as simple as possible. We want to have you people will set the criteria. The person to become a licensed rad tech will have to meet this education, this da-da-da, and then a person in my shop, when it gets an application, they can check, and if you got it, here's your license.
Yeah, to address that, we did not set up a board purposefully for that reason. We kept the cost down. What this does is it says that you have to have met a standard. It's a national standard on the Joint Review Committee on Education Radiologic Technology, or nuclear med technology, depending on which license you want. Basically, what a person in application would have to do is apply for the license, show them the credential that they've received either from the university or program, and then if there's the in-state program as well, they'll be licensed under that.
One more,
and then
that's it for the day.
I'm assuming that the requirements are is what's been put through the pamphlet here when Mr. Uring said that he will leave it up to the legislature to decide what permits, who has to get what. This is the information that was provided in the pamphlet.
Through the chair, Representative Newman, this bill had gone through the vetting process last year as well. That's why it's pretty specific on what the commissioner will be able to impose as far as the limited radiologic imager or full radiographer license. There are some details that we've left to the discretion of the commissioner that we think are just basically administrative duties.
Representative Ledoux and Representative Gardner.
On his point, I had a question. I mean, a comment. On Representative Newman's question.
I think she was first.
Okay.
I've got several questions. First of all, why aren't dental assistants included in this? Just for curiosity's sake.
Well.
It's yours, Mr. Sponsor.
We always want the truth.
You are. He's turning red. Let's let. Do you want to talk about it?
No.
No.
Maybe time for your staff.
Your staff. This bill just doesn't address dental assistance. It doesn't address dental practice at all. It's very specific as to who would be covered under this, and that is radiographic technicians only.
Okay. Second question is this bill pretty much identical to the bill that got left Labor and Commerce 2 years ago?
It is, through the chair, Representative Ledoux. This bill is, let me see which
150
one.
150 or 176, possibly?
150, and I'm not sure which. This was the version that passed the House. Let me see. This was the Labor and Commerce Committee's version that passed the House.
71. And so the exceptions, I think you've got, I'm trying to find where they are now, but the definition of the licensed practitioner, which includes the physician assistant, nurse practitioner, et cetera, mm-hmm. That was in the Labor and Commerce version of the bill.
Yes.
And then I've got actually one further question. You've listed or you've indicated a number of examples. I think you mentioned facilities in Kodiak, Petersburg, Juneau, Fairbanks, et cetera, where there had been errors made. Have those, it's on page 2 of a memo from Clyde Pierce to Brody Anderson, misuse of radiation.
I guess I would defer to Mr. Pierce to respond to that
question. Okay. Is he still online?
Mr. Pierce, are you still with us?
Yes, I am.
Okay. And so I was wondering whether or not those misuses those errors were made by people who would have been exempted from this bill anyway. Were they physician's assistants or nurse practitioners or any of the other things, any of the other areas which are exempted by this bill?
The examples given were people who would be included in the bill.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Representative Gardner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I had two things. One is a response to Representative Newman's question about a doctor hiring somebody who's trained and being ultimately responsible. And I would say that one of the ways that a physician or a clinic could evaluate the competence of the person is by the fact that they had the certificate and they were licensed. So that's kind of a short way for somebody to know that they're fully qualified. But my real question, with the indulgence of the chair, has to do with the problems that Mr. Pierce reports that aren't addressed by this. And I'm sort of troubled because those seem to me as great a public health risk as the training of the person using the equipment. I mean, if you buy fuel in a pump, you see a little sticker that it was inspected to evaluate that the right amount is being fed through and you're being charged a correct amount. And anytime you buy anything with a scale, the scale has a little thing saying it's tested on a regular basis to make sure you're not being cheated. And it seems to me that this is every bit as important, that the equipment is examined by somebody who knows how it should work.
I guess just to speak to that, there are federal regulations dealing with equipment. For instance, in a hospital, there are very specific rules and licensures that apply. Every several years, I just forgot the acronym for this organization, but they review hospital statistics, they go through equipment, they check. There are several other organizations that already deal with the equipment aspect.
Mr. Chair, follow-up.
Follow-up.
Clearly, that's not adequate if one survey can find all these problems in our little state.
Yeah, true.
I don't want to speak for the investigator that's on your inspector that's online here, but he may want to tell you that he's the only one in the state. He can correct me if I'm wrong, but that inspects machinery. He may want someone else to help him along the way. Maybe you need two inspectors, and they inspect the machines like once every 6 or 7 years. You may want to make that a little bit more often than that.
Were dental technicians or anybody in the dental field included in the two previous versions of this bill?
They were not.
I'm just curious as to why you're there's a certain hesitance when anything related to dental comes up in the
yes.
So what's the question I'm not asking, I guess?
I'm just reading this too. I'm guessing that dental assistants were taken out for a specific reason. I'm guessing it has to deal, and the equipment is different, I guess, and I don't know if there's anybody that's online that could testify to the difference in the equipment, but the amount of radiation, again, there's no safe amount of radiation that you can receive, but I think that there is a difference in protocol procedures for dental assistants versus rad techs and nuke med techs.
Representative Liddell.
Do you think it might be worthwhile at a different time and in a separate bill, because one wouldn't want a Christmas tree, you know, a bill to death, to at least consider the idea of dental assistance?
I will look into that.
Thank you.
Representative Gatto.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. You know, it may be that dental techs are covered under the American Dental Society regs or something. I mean, we don't know. Dentists hire dental hygienists who may already have certification and licensing. I do want to comment that I have had my share of radiation, and I'm deeply troubled to know that my technician may have not known as much as that person should have known. So, you know, I'm definitely in support of doing something like this. I do have a different question, though. I'm going to go back to House Bill 150, which took place a couple of years ago.
Okay.
And I noticed that it had get the number correct here. Here it is. When it reached the floor, it had 27 yeas and 9 nays. That's a lot of nays. That's in the record here. Do you have any idea why 9 people on the House floor would have actually opposed something that I would have expected would be 40-0?
Well, you know, of course, in doing some research on the bill, we actually looked at that. Three members on this panel were actually no votes, including the one to your immediate left and to her left. I guess,
but not I.
I guess I don't want to put words in their mouths, but I can. I guess some of the notes that I had seen as to the reasons why it was not supported was the Naval Tribal Health Consortium had some opposition to it. The division, actually at the time, did have some opposition to it. And I think that those two were enough to pull 9 folks off the bill that is otherwise a great, great bill.
And a simple bill.
Thank you.
Representative Gardner.
I'd like to first ask, how did I vote?
you supported it.
Thank you. I have a quick question for Mr. Pierce. I'm sort of harping on this, something that's a little bit beside the point, and I'm sorry for that. But do you inspect dental x-ray machines?
The dental board inspects. Through the chair, this is Clyde Pierce. The dental board inspects the dental equipment in Alaska.
Thank you.
And I guess one more also just to address the same question that Representative Gatto had. I know there are comments, and I've heard comments about more government and less government, and I think that all of us strive to have less government intrusion. And if this bill did not in some way, I believe, add to public health, and make it somewhat better, I would not be proposing it today. So I guess just with closing.
Representative Ledoux.
You know, when I heard this bill last year, I actually was kind of convinced that we were fixing a problem that maybe didn't exist. But you've actually convinced me that maybe there is a problem. I'm still a little bit nervous, though, about some of the rural areas. And in the best of all possible worlds, the rural areas would have, you know, every bit as certified medical care providers as in the urban areas. But sometimes, as we talked about yesterday, it isn't a matter of having the best or somebody that isn't the best. It may be a matter of if we force the best, we may end up with nothing at all, which actually puts things in a worse situation. And I think we need to remain cognizant of that. And, you know, I still don't know where I'm ultimately going to be on this bill because I need to chat with many of my folks in the rural areas.
I think I can put you at ease. It's not my intention to move it today. We've got some further testimony coming in, and I'm also checking with people up north that Carl and I, and I think Mark had the opportunity to visit up in Kotzebue and the regional hub up there. So we've got some more testimony coming in. So if you want to contact your people too, I mean, we can move it on short notice now that it's been heard. So.
Very good.
Do we have any further questions for Hardaway?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Kawasaki, and again, you know, when I'm reading on page 7 here with the license renewal where we have to have a licensee repays required fee, submits evidence satisfactory to the department, person has met applicable continuing education requirements determined by the department. Do we have a system set up where those can be done online?
My mouth is
I hear donuts.
How does that, is that in the bill? Mr. Urey, are you already set up to do that? You know, when this goes into effect, I think that we have, again, in rural Alaska, we have a lot of situations where we have a doctor that comes in, trains somebody to work on their equipment, feels that they're more than able to deal with that equipment, probably not in a large fashion, but just doing an x-ray on a bone to see if it's broken. We have an emergency situation where that technology, that person comes in, sees if a bone's broken to try and do that, you know. I have just a lot of questions like that. Again, just to reiterate a little bit, are we going to go about the continuing education program? Is that system set up? How do we work in rural Alaska? What penalties are there? If something happens, does Mr. Urie decide that? Or
I guess if it pleases the chair, this will be held over. We can have folks that are registered under ACCRT, the College of Radiologic Technicians, talk about their continuing education issues at the next meeting, if you'd like that.
So, excuse me, Mr. Chair. You don't know if there's a system set up now or
how
people in Alaska who can do continuing education?
That's what we're setting up right now.
And I just say that my wife's a pharmacy tech, so she does continuing education over the internet. She can do her testing over the internet and things like that. And you set up to do that.
So, through the chair, if I may, Representative Newman, we would certainly like to have a program where we could do renewals online. Initial licensure, we'll probably have to take a person to look at it, but renewals we'd like to do online. And with continuing education, the way we do it with other professions, they answer a question, have you done the required, CE, and they check yes. So they get their license, and then we do a random audit, and they go out, and then if your name is called, then you have to prove that you got that CE, and that's how we would do it here. If you didn't, you're in trouble. And you'd be surprised how many we find that didn't do that in different professions. But.
Representative Gatto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Just a comment, Mr. Urien. You know that half a person you said you're hiring and the half you had to hire because you can't get a half a person?
Yes.
How about calibration of machines for a half a person? Consideration.
We'll work on that.
Well, is there anybody else in the room that would care to testify on this bill? And nobody on the committee? With that, we're adjourned at 4:07.